Call for Action presents Of Consuming Interest, a public service show that discusses scams, deceptive offers, and other consumer concerns. Here's the director of WUSA 9 Call for Action and your host, Shirley Rooker.
Are you aware that at least hundreds of millions of dollars are lost to investment fraud each year? How do you avoid getting ripped off? Well, my guest is going to provide you with tools and information to help avoid those scams. My guest is Owen Donnelly. He's the chief counsel of the Securities and Exchange Commission Office of Investor Education and Advocacy. Owen, welcome to Of Consuming Interest.
Thank you so much. Glad to be here.
Now, this is a fascinating subject, and over the years, I've dealt with so much investment fraud, and consumers really lose an awful lot of money. And there seems to be a lot of avenues where investment fraud takes place. It can be from your friend. It can be from a group you belong to. It can be from a crooked broker. It could be from almost any source. And unfortunately, it's kind of hard to know for consumers, the average consumer. What do you tell a person who's looking, let's say, to get into investments in the stock market for the first time? Where do you tell them to start?
It's a great question. The first place is to start with a registered investment. Start with a registered broker dealer or a registered investment advisor. Now, if you don't want
Let me just stop you to say, registered with whom?
That's a great question. Registered with either the SEC or FINRA, which is the self-regulatory organization which governs brokers, or with the states. Many investment professionals are registered with one of those groups, and that gives you a lot of protection. There are certain standards they have to adhere to. You have recourse if they tell you wrong. So that's a great first step. Then again, there are ways to invest on your own. There are a lot of ways to do that. If you're going to do that, you need to be even more careful. Even going back to when you're selecting a person, there's a lot of research you can do on the person you select. It's probably worth people learning something about that.
All right. Let's start out with a person. You've decided you're going to hire a broker to help you do this. And it could be an online broker. It could be anywhere. How do you go about checking out this company? Now, I know that you have information on brokers, on disciplinary actions taken against them. You have a bunch of information at the SEC website. So tell us what the website is to start with.
Sure. So you can go to sec.gov. That's sec.gov or investor.gov. And from either of those sites, link onto our database that you can do research on the financial professional. One of them links to FINRA's broker check system and another system that we call IAPD, which is the Investment Advisor Public Database. But you can type in the name of a person and it will pop up who they're registered with, any disciplinary history. One of the most important uses of these background checks is to see if they're not registered. Because if someone is selling you an investment and they're not registered, you want to ask them, why are you not registered as a broker-dealer or an investment advisor?
All right. Now, are they required to be – they're not required to be registered.
Well, the SEC regularly brings cases on folks that are acting as a broker or a dealer and they need to be registered. So most people do. There are exceptions to registration, but by and large, if someone
– That's a security blanket for you. At least that gives you a place to start.
Exactly.
Guarantee it by any means.
Yes. Now, this is just dealing with the person that you absolutely have to do background checks. This is before you even get to deciding what investment, assuming you're working through a professional.
Now, suppose you want to investigate. You're looking at a company you think you may want to investigate. I mean, you want to invest in. So you also have a database there that tells you about the finances of the company, their annual reports, and that sort of thing, correct?
Yes, that's exactly right.
And that's at sec.gov investor.gov?
Yes, accessible both ways. Investor.gov is our resource really targeted toward retail investors. SEC.gov.
Now, what do you mean retail investors?
I mean the everyday folks, not high net worth folks necessarily, not institutional investors, but for the average person wants to ask some questions.
Somebody like me who wants to know something, and I would go there to start prepping myself.
It is a great first place to, and from there, the database that you refer to is called Edgar.
I love Edgar.
Edgar's good. It has a great deal of data. Now, Edgar really is more of a place to find information about public companies. You know, you can find their annual reports, learn about what they sell, what risks that they reveal. You can find data we call Forms 3, 4, and 5, where insiders sell securities. So this is really on the research side of, you know, if you were trying to decide between three public companies you want to invest in, Edgar would be a great place to start.
And hopefully you're going to be able to understand what you see there?
Yes, for the most part. Now, of course, some of these documents, you know, I think we've
they
made
They can be complicated.
Yes, they can be very complicated. But on that front, for example, a great place to start looking at a public company is an annual report called a 10-K. Well, on investor.gov, our office has what we call an investor bulletin entitled How to Read a 10-K. And it's a three-page document written in plain language that says, here are the elements of a 10-K, and here are the things you might be interested in. A 10-K can be a very long document, and it takes some patience to get through. But with the assistance of our guide, I think it's manageable.
Well, it tells you the high points, the important things that you need to look for, to red flags and whatnot, I'm assuming.
Yeah, yes. And 10-K, I mean, 10-Ks are usually highly polished documents. And when you're dealing with the world of registered companies in Edgar, you're probably dealing with larger public companies. Mm-hmm. There's a lot more data available.
Okay, let's talk about some of the problems. I mean, everybody's heard of Madoff or Madoff. How do you all pronounce his name?
I say Madoff, though I don't know.
Well,
that's
I like
correct.
To say he made off with a lot of people's money. So, sorry about that, which is very true. But I think that seems to me, at least on the surface, to be a classic, almost affinity fraud, meaning that a group. Someone is ripping off a specific group. We'll talk a little bit more about that in a minute. But basically, that was how Madoff worked, wasn't it? Was through a network of people, Hollywood stars, investors. It seemed to me like people had to be recommended to the investment. Tell us how it – and why did it lure so many people to lose so much money?
Well, I mean, these are really serious stories. I mean, these are people, many victims that lost so much of their life. I think that some of the lessons to be learned, and of course, they're all different. There are a lot of aspects to this, but one I think is really important is that there's some notion that the securities fraud victim is some unsophisticated, relatively poor person who doesn't know anything. And that's really not necessarily the case. I mean, there's actually data that says more victims are older. Some are men. They're financially sophisticated. And it just goes to show you that, you know, the fraudsters are going to go where the money is, just like with Willie Sutton, right? I mean, they're going this actually brings up a subject that I think is very important. You know, as in this economy, more and more older Americans are moving to social media. More and more older Americans have money.
Yeah, we're going to talk about social media because I think that's a very significant avenue for people to learn about people. But going back to the Madoff scam, that was a classic Ponzi scheme, wasn't it? Which starts out with an investor and they make money because the new investor's money is going to pay off the old investor's.
Right. I mean,
on its face after a while.
That's exactly what a Ponzi scheme is. And all the, I mean,
it's
all
a pyramid
the,
scheme.
Yeah. All the details are you know, laid out in court documents. But generally speaking, I mean, that's the Ponzi scheme. I mean, new investors are essentially just used to pay off the earlier investors. And at some point, when enough people want their money out, it fails. It's a matter of math.
And Ponzi was a real person.
Yes. I highly recommend people are interested in this space.
Reading about him.
It's interesting.
It's a classic.
Well,
let's just take a brief pause. We'll come back to talk about that to let our listeners know that they're tuned into Of Consuming Interest. I'm Shirley Rooker. My guest is Owen Donnelly. He's the chief counsel of the SEC's Office of Investor Education and Advocacy. And we're talking about how you can avoid being ripped off. And we read about these people losing millions of dollars. I mean, it is tragic. It's very tragic. But going back to what you were talking about just before the break, you want to pick up there?
Sure. I mean, the typical Ponzi scheme exists in a lot of ways. I mean, one of the problems we face is that the folks don't look out for the red flags. And in almost any fraud we see, there are some common red flags that if folks knew about them, they'd be in a better place to protect themselves. For example, the number one, and if you look at a lot of SEC cases or cases the state spring or FINRA or other jurisdiction, there's the guaranteed return with no risk.
I love that.
It's over and over and over the same horrible story as someone guarantees even a modest return of 8%, they say is modest, which would not be modest, and they say there's no risk. And they do this over and over and over. That is just a giant red flag. And a lot of the Ponzi schemes we see have that. You mentioned the affinity aspect, and this is a troubling it's a troubling trend. It exists in not just country club settings, but churches, religious groups, minority groups, and anyone any group that has common identity, you're going to find these fraudsters. In fact,
often members of that very group.
And they are. I was at church one Sunday, and I was actually approached by someone, and they did not know what I did for a living. This is just a term I use. Some of these folks don't know they're lying. I mean, so they're what I call true believers.
Oh, yeah, I see what you're saying.
And they don't understand that this is just a big fraud they're soliciting you to.
Well, they may be doing this on behalf of somebody else.
Yes.
I mean, often I find that that's what happens, that this is person – we've had some instances where churches have been ripped off with tens of thousands of dollars.
Right.
It's really frightening, and people would contact Call for Action. Unfortunately, once the money's gone, there's not really any way to get it. I mean, maybe you can sue somebody, but good luck with that.
Right. And that's what makes this so important. I mean, like what you're doing, spreading these messages, the prevention is so much more important because you're right. I mean, often, especially in those smaller cases, the money's gone. I mean, they're criminals. I mean, they spend the money.
And I think the horror of it is it's somebody that you feel like you should trust. That's the whole hallmark of affinity fraud, as I can tell it.
That's exactly right.
Somebody that you have a reason to believe would not steer you wrong.
That's right. And I think sometimes people are amazed at how low these folks are. But we brought a case a couple years ago involving the deaf community in the Midwest. And it was a scam targeting deaf Americans, older Americans targeted all the time, and then religious groups. You know, I'm a member of your faith.
Exactly. Well, let's move into one of our favorite subjects, which is the social media.
Great.
I shudder to think about some of the things people tell about themselves on all of these sites on the internet, and it's going to be there forever. Don't they realize that? That's a rhetorical question. Anyway, Owen, let's talk about what you see. And I know it must be very hard to trace back to see how a fraud started, how it got a victim based on the social media. But nevertheless, when people start revealing information about themselves, where they live, how much money they make, where they're going, what new car they bought, all of this stuff adds up to a profile of a person. Tell us why this can be really bad.
It's a great point. So if the aggregate of all the data that folks regularly put out, you know, what kind of car you drive, well, that tees off perhaps how much money you have.
Mm-hmm.
Enough of this data gets out there and someone can build essentially a profile. That doesn't mean – I mean, I use social media. But
you're not out there posting all this personal information. Use it professionally.
That's exactly right. And I'm careful about what data I put out. One of the things that I'm greatly concerned about is that one of the fastest growing populations on – using social media is older Americans. As older Americans and social media has some great aspects to it. It engages in a community. You can talk to folks all the time. You can see pictures of your family. But it also leaves you open to pitches from fraudsters. And while if you'll indulge me, so in the 80s, this interesting, terrible scam was fraudsters would send a fax to an unknowing victim, and the fax would say, "John, got a great stock tip." And then 2 seconds later, they'd send another fax and say, "Ooh, please disregard this." And this was a classic pump and dump, trying to jack up the price.
Mm-hmm.
This happened in emails in the 90s. I'm concerned we'll see that using social media now, but it's worse because the incoming facts, but it will be a lure, they'll have information about you.
Right.
They'll say, "Owen, hey, I know you really like cars. I've got a great investment dealing with cars." It makes people more vulnerable, and I think I do not think we should be surprised that it's going to target seniors. That's what I worry about. But again,
any group is vulnerable. It doesn't matter what your age.
No, you're exactly right.
I mean, we see with identity fraud, I mean, true identity fraud, not credit card theft, but with identity fraud, younger people are the targets.
Yes,
most often, interestingly enough.
Right.
But yes, any group. I mean, anybody is a potential
anywhere
victim.
Anywhere that folks think – I mean, anywhere that the fraudsters and the criminals see money. I mean, that's mm-hmm. what – we mm-hmm. I regularly speak to senior centers, and, you know, why senior centers? Well, you have a whole bunch of people who can afford to be there.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I think identity theft often hits younger folks because they don't have resources, but they've got their ID, and that's very valuable.
That's right. They've got a name and a social security
number.
That's really what they need. Well, all right. Let's go back and talking about the social media. How do you protect yourself? There are ways to limit exposure.
Yes.
And you've got to do that.
Yes, you have to do that. I mean, we have a great piece on investor.gov, and I strongly recommend people read it on using social media to make investing decisions. The number one tip that I'd give is look at your privacy settings. Be aware of how much information you're putting out there. Almost most major social media platforms allow you the ability to restrict access to only people you want and to what you put out there. So use those tools and learn about those tools. They're really pretty good. The other thing that's really important is, especially with something like Facebook, make sure you think about who you allow to be your, quote, friend. I even ask in the regulated space with brokers and advisors, like, I think as an investor, I might consider whether or not I want a broker or an advisor to be my friend. I mean, if they're my social friend, I might. But if they're just someone that I may or may not even have a business relationship, maybe that's not who I want to tell that my birthday is coming up.
Mm-hmm.
Pay attention.
Because I've got a good stock for you.
Exactly.
Birthday.
It's exactly right. And the second thing, and this goes back to whether you're on social, whether you're talking about an in-person pitch or affinity fraud. There are red flags.
But we want to believe. I mean, you know, we really do want to believe. And sometimes I think it's not because we're necessarily naive. It's just that we want to believe and we trust someone. And that's what I think you call the halo effect.
Yes, that's exactly right there. I mean, we've done some research and
I have a halo, Owen. You're going to believe me.
I can
me.
Trust you.
I can trust you.
Right. I mean, the people come in, there are all these signs, you know, come in a nice suit or they have a nice desk or they have a nice title. And as an aside with titles, titles can be very tricky. My boss tells a great story. She was out at an event, and someone came to her and said, "You know, this person approached me with a card, and the card said, you know, John Smith, HSD, and said he was an advisor. And what is the title HSD?" And my boss couldn't quite figure it out. High school diploma. That's what HSD stands for.
On that lovely note, we're going to take a brief pause here to let our listeners know they're tuned in to A Consuming Interest. I'm Shirley Rooker. My guest is Owen Donnelly. He's the chief counsel of the SEC's Office of Investor Education and Advocacy. And we're talking about the many ways you can get ripped off if you aren't careful. So HSD means high school diploma.
Yes.
I'm going to have to – that'll look really good on a card.
It sure will.
We're laughing about it, but honestly, it's really scary.
It is scary. I mean, one of the things that I've learned in this job and looking at cases is how these fraudsters and criminals will do absolutely anything to separate you from your money.
Mm-hmm.
They will lie about all manner of investments. I mean, anything you
They'll even give you some money.
Yes. Oh, yes. There's mm-hmm. there's a fraud we see regularly. It doesn't always involve federal securities laws. It's called an advance fee fraud. It's quite simple. They say, "Oh, we," and in the context of our office, we'll see people who have lost money in a real securities scam or a lawsuit. And they'll be someone will contact them and say, "Oh, I've got your money back. We've done it. I need $3,000 for the taxes." And so these unwitting victims, it's called a reload scam. They're hit again.
That's right.
They send $3,000, and of course, you know.
And you know that's been going on forever. I mean, we've had so many victims at Call for Action who've done this. They've been ripped off with some sort of a telemarketing fraud or anything.
And then
they follow up and say, "Gosh, I'm sorry you lost that money, but you know we've gotten it back for you."
It's amazing what they'll do. Mm. But I mean, in the
well,
context,
especially if you're involving a large amount of money.
There are lists that these criminals sell to one another of people that have been victims.
The ripped off list.
Yeah,
exactly. The victim list, if you want to. I hate that word, but nevertheless, it's you're a victim. Okay, what are the other things that we need to look for? I'm sure there are more hallmarks of fraud.
There sure are. So the first one is essentially what we were saying before. If it looks too good to be true, it is. That is true in investing. Anyone that guarantees you a high rate of return with no
risk, they
are lying to you. They might not know they're lying, but they are. Then there's a lot of other sales techniques that apply that I warn people to be careful of. Have to do something quickly. You've got to get in this investment today or tomorrow or it's going to go bad. It is so unlikely that an average retail investor would have an opportunity that's going to disappear in a day. So anytime I hear that, it's a red flag. I mean, be very careful. Again, ask person's registration. A lot of cases, you know, we haven't done academic research on this, and so this is sort of my reading cases over the years. But the vast majority of these retail-facing frauds involve unregistered persons, and they involve guaranteed rates of return. So those are the things. But it's the pressure. If you're being pressured, they don't. There's so few investment opportunities that are suitable for retail investors that only last a day or two.
That's just not the case.
It's just not the case.
And
exactly.
Then why should you be so lucky to get a call out of the blue or an email saying, gosh, Owen, you're so special. I'm going to give you this really great deal. Why wouldn't they put their money in it? It's such a sure thing.
That's exactly right. Unsolicited calls. I mean, as you say, a call out of the blue. And that's, again, linking it back to social media. That's another thing that worries me. Mm-hmm. It's when someone reaches out to you with an investment idea and you don't know them. I mean, you should be careful even if you do know them.
That's true. Absolutely.
But the unsolicited calls, I mean, it's just a red flag.
Well, what about investing online and the companies that you see? I mean, are those registered with the SEC, or is it some of them allow you to trade and some of them, I guess, are actually brokers who are going to offer you advice? How do you sort through them? There's so much information out. There's so much advertising going on.
Yes. I mean, it's very complicated. I mean, that's the right answer. For the most part, the online exchanges that are trading are registered broker-dealers, and you can look them up. You can go to SEC.gov. Mm-hmm.
And make sure they are,
100%. But there is so much out on the internet that is awash with fraud. And we've put out alert recently on fraudulent trading in binary options. I mean, one of the things it's a complicated type of security that does exist in certain corners legitimately, but we issued a warning about them because there's fraud in the space. I mean, pretty much any legitimate investment you can name, there's a related fraud that goes with it.
Of course.
So, I mean, the key thing is to ask a lot of questions and don't invest in something you don't understand. I mean, that is the key. I mean,
it's true.
If you are going through a legitimate broker dealer, you're looking into public companies. You know, I'm not an investment advisor. I can never say you'll make money or you won't lose much. But you are much, much safer when you ask questions and do research.
All right. Now, what about the companies online that allow you to trade online? Now, that's a kind of different. I have never used one, but I assume that is where you make your own choices and you do the trading online. Now, that is not as likely to be a victim of fraud, except you're likely to be a victim of your own lack of knowledge.
Now, that is correct. Now, I mean, we have a great deal of content on investor.gov about how to make investment decisions, you know, asset allocation, very mm-hmm. unbiased, generic, never to point you towards a particular investment. But here are questions you should ask and ways to think about investing. If you're going to invest online, please make sure you're dealing with a legitimate source. Please do the research. You know, I mean, almost all broker-dealers have online brokerages now. You don't need to deal with a person.
So the trades are an online – they're online brokers as well, but they're not making recommendations to you. As I understand it, you're just allowed to go in there and make a trade without having to pay a high commission.
That's the ones that are advertised on TV and ones – that's right. There are many services where – all you get is the ability to buy and sell what you tell, you know, when you type in the order.
Right.
And if you're dealing with a registered broker dealer, a legitimate source, that is way safer than dealing with someone that you don't know
giving them their money. You're making your own investment choices
yes.
here, whether they be good or bad.
Yes.
You're going to have to live with them.
And the legitimate broker dealers, I mean, they're insured by SIPC, so I mean, you have protections that you do not have when you deal with unregistered.
Well, we've only got about a minute left, but the big thing is, if it's too good to be true, it is too good to be true. That's one of the biggest red flags there is, right?
That is the number one red flag that I'd point out to
your
listeners.
Right, and it's going to say, oh, we guarantee you all this money. Oh, and I've got a deal for you. Let me tell you about it. It's not going to cost you very much right now. But, you know, I think what happens too, people go into an investment and they start making money and they put more money into it because they've made money, not knowing it's a classic pyramid scheme.
That's exactly
Roll
right.
the money over, the Ponzi, whatever. It's yes, Ponzi's a very interesting guy. People should read about him.
Yes.
Well, thank you ever so much for being here with us. Just to tell our listeners, the websites with all this wonderful information is sec.gov and investor.gov. So do your research. Check out the company before you invest. You've been listening to Of Consuming Interest. My guest has been Owen Donnelly, Chief Counsel with the SEC's Office of Investor Education and Advocacy. And you're listening to Of Consuming Interest right here on 1500 AM WFED. I'm Shirley Rooker. Thank you for joining us.
Of Consuming Interest is a public service program presented by WUSA 9 Call for Action, hosted by Shirley Rooker. Call for Action is an international nonprofit network of hotlines which offer free and confidential assistance. If you have a complaint, contact Call for Action at 301-652-HELP. That's 301-652-HELP.